Okay, welcome back, and we have a great opportunity to talk to Dana Durnford, who is on a scientific research expedition again up the British Columbia coast, and he was kind enough to be in port tonight and to make this time available to talk to all of you to tell you what's going on the trip. Hello, Dana. How are you?
Hi, Jeff. Good, thank you. Yes.
Glad to hear it. Where are you in the timeline of the journey? I don't want to know your location. They'll zero you in on satellite.
Yeah, timeline is I'm 75 days into the journey, and we got 4.5 months left, hopefully, to try to pull this off.
Tell our listeners what it is you're trying to pull off.
Okay, I'm sorry. Let me get everybody up to speed. Good point, Jeff. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, when Fukushima first happened, for the first several years, there was some, you know, debate about what was going on. So we investigated it heavily and found out this was a real event. And then we also covered thousands of headlines about the ocean before we actually launched expeditions. And I was doing this live, and we decided it was best to go out and look at the coastline because we're straight across from it and see if we can, because I'm very familiar with the ocean and have a long history.
Dana is a former professional diver. He's spent more time underwater than I think he has above water. But
yeah, when you add it all up, it's 2 full years, 24 hours a day underwater if you actually.
Yeah.
It's a little over 14,000 log dollars, but probably another 3,500 hours of me looking for Davy Jones' locker. And
Dana knows the Pacific Ocean and the Atlantic, but especially the Pacific, as well as any oceanographer. Probably spent much more time in it than most oceanographers. He knows.
I would say so. I take more hours underwater than any academic period.
Right. And what we have, let me say this just for our listeners to help box this in. The high tide line going out about 60 feet is what you call, I believe, the cradle of life for the Pacific. That's where most of the plentiful sea life is that we can see, and a lot of it we can't see. But this is the part that has forever been one of British Columbia's crowning glories. The seashore, the tide pools, the beaches, all the way up. It's just absolutely gorgeous. Teeming doesn't even come close to describing the kind of wildlife, animal life, plant life, and it doesn't matter, flora, fauna. And this goes all the way down into Washington State, into Oregon State, and into Northern California, and all the way down the coast. About 3 years ago now, I guess, we began to see story after story about starfish literally disintegrating, falling apart in tide pools everywhere, all up and down BC and Washington, Oregon, California. And that was the real door opener. That's when we knew that things were going to get to be horrific. This all comes from Fukushima Daiichi. It is a destroyed nuclear power plant. The water from the mountains goes under the plant through the meltdown fuel, the corium, which is under three of the reactors. It becomes incredibly irradiated, and it pours into the Pacific Ocean around the clock and has for over, 7 years now?
Yes, sir. And so there's also a plume coming out of there constantly of what has been described as steam, but the steam has been recorded in 6 different places at 10 sievers, and they always downplay the numbers, but 10 sievers is a lethal dose for anybody that walks through that
10 steam. Sieverts, S-I-E-V-E-R-T-S, is dead. You're dead, all right?
You're going to die. If you walk through it and keep going, you'll be dead in a couple of days if you're lucky.
Right.
It's going to be a painful death. If not, 2 weeks, you're dead. And so none of Harvard or universities, Yale academics, or any of the nuclear apologists or big shots have ever went there because these are lethal doses all around the site. Now, the steam was coming out of the ground randomly all over the site because one of the reactors for sure had gone down into the earth, and the earth was split.
It was boiling off the groundwater, yeah.
Yeah, it had split the earth, and the steam was coming up out of the earth. It was over 10 sievers. But that was actually what their particular Geiger counters were maxed out at, was 10 sievers. And so they alluded to that at the very end of the stories. And now, you know, at this point, the story came out, I think it was 2014, the government was looking at everybody 60 and over should be prepared to die. So, like, when you think about it in that context, why have a nuclear power plant on your planet anywhere when if something goes wrong, you know, 60 and over should be prepared to die. That should wake anybody right up right away to say, hey, that's not normal. We don't need that. But we actually got these things all over the planet because, as Jeff knows, they've lied about every facet of this forever. And so these expeditions are based upon factual statistics that have come out in media that people... sometimes with thousands of headlines on the ocean, I can't remember the exact number, but anyway, thousands of really salacious headlines I've covered. And so that on its own warrants the expedition. So Greenpeace should have been all over this. All kinds of big organizations, institutions should have
all
been all
over this. All of them. The Nature Conservancy, Sierra Club, Greenpeace, every damn right. one of them. How okay. many of them showed up to really bitch about it? Zero.
Nobody. And the trickery is, Greenpeace is too big to control, right? It's just so such a big, so it's been taken over by the goblin. And there's good people go there, but they get sucked up by the goblin machine and they can't aspire or do anything sensitive.
Okay.
And it just destroys anybody's motivation, right? They go to these big organizations, get sucked in, spit back out, and they just run out of steam.
Well, the big organizations are run by the very international globalist elite who right. control the planet. Yeah. We know. It's called created opposition. They know what they're doing.
And
they create their own enemies so they can control it.
Right, and so we went out on the last expedition, and because we're forced to, as like we were just talking about, and what we done was we done species counts was all we were left with. There was no, like, normally we can go away for everybody that's listening. You get
Dana, I'm sorry, hold on. Dana, talk a little bit more slowly. The phone is okay, but it's not the most crisp, so just slow down a tiny bit, please.
I'll knock it back in that gear and put it in second gear instead of third. And so we went out several years ago, and we done species counts, and we discovered there should be 700 algaes, which is kelp, in the tidal zones. And in that kelp alone, there's around 6,000 species of invertebrates that are the backbones that are dependent on the kelp as a habitat.
So let me rephrase that. In tidal zones, including tidal pools and all of that, rocks,
right.
there should be 700 different kinds of kelp. And over 6,000 different kinds of animal life. That's the norm.
Now, they were like little krill, like little shrimp that we're talking about, those particular ones. There's supposed to be a lot of highly visible species. They're like starfish. There will be 78 species of starfish, and they come in multiple colors. There will be around 76 species of sponges. They will come in multiple colors, highly visible, very big sizes for everybody out there. There would be 70 species of sponges. They're very distinct and highly, very visual colors to them. And so there was just incredible diversity in the tidal zones. Now, every tidal zone would have that there. If you had enough people, you would be able to count all those species no matter where you went. And that was symmetrical throughout the whole coastline, not counting mussels and all the clams and oysters. Now, this is where it got interesting. So when you look at the clam, there's this big community of clams here, and they're very distinct at low tide. Their shells really stand out. The dead shells are what the beaches are actually made of. And
these are clams. These are bivalves. All right. Now, you're saying that a lot of beach sand is made of clam shells? Interesting.
Yeah. When I went to the beaches here, the only stuff I was seeing was cockle shells. These are a big clam. They're very distinct. Now, I didn't see any oyster shells on that beaches. I didn't see any scallop shells on those beaches, any abalone shells on those beaches. I didn't see any razorback clams on the beaches, little necks, manila clams. And they live in harmony with each other no matter where you would go. You don't see any mussel shells on the beach. And you're not seeing any different variety of sizes in the cockle shells. And those shells, like little baby cockle shells or medium cockle shells, you were just seeing the great big ones. And so the beaches, you wouldn't see any starfish on the beaches, of course. And
when did you first notice this, Dana? How many years ago now?
This was a little over 3 years ago.
Okay.
And now we're back doing it again. And it's just terrible weather. I got pushed back into port again a few days ago. This is my second attempt to get out of here. And it's a very dangerous place. I'm 80 miles off the coast of Canada in this little group of islands that is very isolated, but it's very shallow water. And so we've been getting storms 25 to 35 knots nonstop.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's brutal. Heavy rains, too, before that. Right now, it's just kind of like summer here for the last 2 days, but it's very dangerous. There's a boat sunk right now at the mouth of the harbor from a couple of days ago. It came in on the wrong tide, and they were rescued right away, but that boat is still sitting there. I'll pass by that when I hit it.
Wow. So this is the little harbor on one of the islands you're talking about.
Yeah, it's in Queen Charlotte City. It's a little tiny community of 800 people. It's very isolated. It's a very backwards kind of a place. Where
what do those people do for a living there, Dana?
Right, and so most of there originally was fishing, a lot of fishing going on here, but obviously that's not everybody's complaining. And but, I mean, they're still getting some fish here, obviously enough to keep, like the bigger fish, they don't get cancer, and they're the last to go, the higher up the food chain there.
Right.
Now, you know, we also seen just a year and a half ago, there was a 500,000 birds less than 100 miles from here that had starved to death. But all the killer whales on both coastlines, what really interests, because they're still getting fish, they're still, now I've only seen a total, Jeff, of 15 seals on the expedition.
That's it?
Almost 75 days, yeah.
How many days?
75 days, is it 80 days or something?
80 days.
75 days. 75
right.
days.
And you've seen 15 seals or thereabout. Wow.
And that's terrifying. Isn't that inconceivable? And
what did you say about killer whales, Dana?
Now, killer whales were in Puget Sound and the west coast of Vancouver Island are all emaciated. So how do they get emaciated when they can eat seals and sea lions and otters and dolphins and halibut and octopus and everything else? And they do. Birds. I was talking to a big yacht came in there this afternoon, filled up with water. He came across. It was 80 miles across. I asked him how many birds he counted. He was 69 years old. He said 15. And he had worked halibut here all of his life, but obviously now they're retired. Beautiful boat they had there, too. And he was shocked himself when I had the conversation with him. But most people definitely don't want to have the conversation. Most people are so caught up in just trying to survive, I guess. And it's so difficult to have a conversation with people because people are just not aware, and you don't want to overwhelm them.
How can they not be aware when there's nothing left along the coast?
Yeah, yeah. Well, TV, they're back in the, they're in their house every night. And
total denial.
Right. And there is, I did talk to the locals, some of the locals here who live on the island out here. Very nice people, have been there 20-odd years on that island. And the first thing they said to me was, because I had the big rig strapped onto my body, I was up in town shooting footage with the big camera. And they approached me, and but they were telling me the porpoises disappeared here in 2015, all of them. And they were used to seeing them every day, the harbor porpoise. They literally lived right here. They've been here all their lives. And they said the beaches are dead, the Pacific Ocean is dying. And that was one of the first statements they had made to me. I thought was, this is not the first time people had said that to me on this trip. They admit that the Pacific Ocean is dying. To the ones that will actually try to have a conversation. But it's such a complicated, unless you get like a whole 1 hour show like we're doing tonight here or something, it's very hard for people to wrap their mind around, I would imagine. And I'm not able to, I have to ignore everything, put my life on hold for 7 months and get out and find out if the ocean recovered. And it's very difficult. It's been an extremely trying trip. Things break down constantly. It's just like bad weather constantly. We're in the summer. The idea was to catch summer run down the coast.
Oh, yeah, I remember when you planned it, of course.
Yeah, and it's it should kick in at some point. I got perseverance on my side. So when the weather breaks, which it is in the next couple of days, I'll start rolling back down the coastline. It's a little discouraging, though, because I've been at this and I've taken an unimagined. It's unimaginable how bad this trip has been.
That's really saying something. I'm shocked.
Yeah.
What bad
yeah,
news?
No, cold time. The coastline is stripped. It's really, it's so silent at nighttime. It's so quiet in the forest. I went into the forest everywhere I go now on purpose looking for spider webs or any kind of life. And no birds. Some of the islands I have heard birds on, but most of the islands, no birds. Nothing like that whatsoever. No insects bugging you. And if you do see an insect, he's a loner. I go right into these islands, heavily forest, tropical rainforest coastline. So even in the high tide zone is completely gone on top of that for everybody that's taking notes out there. And what that means is the high tide zone is separate. This is where the sea spray goes up. And there was an incredible community of flora and fauna and sea anemones and insects. And it was well documented, but the entire thing is missing. We noticed that the last time, too, but it's more pronounced, I think, now.
Wow.
And there's a small strip on the coastline of algae. When that goes, it's going to look just like the moon there. You know, and they closed down the sports fishery for the first time, the coho salmon over in Prince Rupert and Skeena River. This is a massive river. Mm-hmm. Notorious sports fishing. This is really saying something when they've done something like that. When I was over in Prince Rupert, which is right by Alaska, and when I'm doing the coastline, I travel, for anybody who's not familiar, we travel all the way up to the Alaska border and Canada border. Mm-hmm. We hung out here and we've done multiple spots. We're looking for pinch points of the coastline.
What are you looking for?
The pinch points is where the ocean has to come in to
pinch
flood
points.
The coast.
Okay.
Yeah. So pinch points is a spot on the coastline between islands and groups of islands where the ocean will come through to go to the interior of the rest of Canada. And for people not familiar, there's 27,000 islands up here. And so on the very outside ocean side, there's what we call pinch points. These are the ideal spots because the ocean has to flow through there to get to the rest of Canada. And so there, if we don't find the species there, we're not going to find it on the interior. We are checking that, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, you know, let me say something. You said quiet forests, silent forests. This is no joke. When I moved up here, and I'm in southern Oregon, at nights in the summer, from May on, April even, the number of crickets, incalculable. The sound of crickets at night was so loud it would almost keep you awake. And at the last break, I stuck my head outside the studios here. You know how many crickets I heard, Dana?
I'm afraid to ask.
Zero.
Well.
Not a sound. Not one cricket. All night. Nothing.
Yeah.
And nobody seems to notice. Nothing. And it makes me enraged that we have done this to this planet. And I go out in the daytime, I might see one fly, a few bees, wasps. That's it. I saw one red-winged blackbird this year. Otherwise, there are no songbirds. The songbirds, you'd get up in the morning. You'd have to sometimes because about 5:30 in Oregon and other places, and probably BC is the same. It used to be that the birds would wake you up.
That's a fact.
You know what I mean? There's nothing out there. You don't hear anything. There are no crickets, there are no birds. So when the bugs go, the birds go. They die or they migrate. They go to where the food is. The bugs are gone. They're not coming back. And I got a letter from someone I'm going to read after the break here and after the bottom of the hour break. I sent it to Dana, and it's from an extraordinary man named Gene, and I'll have him on the program this Thursday, I think, is where it's going to work out. He's from Idaho, and he went to visit the Oregon coast. Hadn't been there in many, many years. And I will read you what he sent to the state of Oregon. He copied it to me. I will read that to you after the break. There are no insects left. They're just gone. No seabirds to speak of. A few. Wait till you hear this letter. You've got it, Dana. You saw it. But when you stick your head out there at night and there are no crickets, Dana, how is it that everybody isn't talking about it? That's the part I don't get. It's bizarre. They're hiding the reality of it. They don't want to talk about it, so they pretend it's normal. It's not normal. It's silence. Nothing out there. Anyway, that's enough. Go ahead.
no, you're 100% correct what you're saying. It's frightening. Silence is the scariest thing imaginable because it's not coming back. And so that was the whole point of this expedition, was to see, keep our fingers crossed, and hopefully find at least some kind of, some sign, something. But that's the way the ocean works is, if you plow in a healthy ocean, then the species on both sides and down deep will fill up the gap. And so the coastline didn't recede itself, the whole coastline. So it can't be just, and we know it's true all the way through America's coastline, Pacific Ocean.
Yes.
Then, and also, the glaciers are gone.
It's even now tell me about the glaciers, the British Columbia glaciers.
Right, and so we had glaciers the whole length of the coastline, and no matter where you were in the 27,000 islands, you've seen, if you're looking towards the mainland, you've seen glaciers in Ireland. That is, of course, the whole water regulated, the streams, the estuaries, the rivers, and the coastline of British Columbia, that cold water was vital, particularly in the summertime during droughts. That was the saving grace for all the rivers and the estuaries and the lakes.
Sure.
And so the salmon can't get up to a lot of the rivers during droughts unless they could, because they can count on the glaciers. That is gone symmetrically through the whole coastline. So that is one of the biggest things to never get talked about. We've talked about it many times, but it's one of the biggest things we never hear anybody bring up in a conversation, the significance of how that affects the ecosystem, because all the rivers and lakes and estuaries would be built in the quick current. I don't need to tell people why we're going to get quick currents and everything else. There's because there's
right, okay. All right, Dana, hold on a minute. I have to take a break. We'll come right back with Dana Durnford, who is on a research expedition right now, another scientific research journey all up and down and around the British Columbia coast. Back in a minute. Okay, let's get right back to Dana Durnford. I just sent an email off to Yoshi, and he is still in China. He will be out of China and will be able to be on the program this Thursday night with Gene from Idaho. So Yoshi will be here Thursday, so we've got the two best of the best, Dana Monday and Yoshi on Thursday. That's Yoichi Shimatsu, if you want to read his material. It's on the left side at Rents. And Dana Durnford's site is thenuclearproctologist.org. All right? So you've got plenty there. Dana, let me read this email I got from Gene in Idaho that I did send you, and I sent it to Yoshi as well. You all right?
Thank you.
All right. Yeah. This, I believe, he sent to the state of Oregon and has never gotten a response. He writes, "Hello, I tried to call Oregon State University earlier to hopefully speak to an oceanographer about my recent trip to Seaside, Oregon. Being from Honolulu and Northern California, I'm pretty familiar with the ocean and the multiple species it is habitat for. So on a several-day trip to Seaside, Oregon, I was astonished to see no marine plants along the shoreline, nothing living at the high tide line, and the complete lack of mussels, oysters, plankton, sea lions, and sea otters, not to mention starfish, crabs, and 100 other things I can't think even to name. Also, it seems that there is no more seaweed, kelp, or other plant life in the ocean. Can someone please enlighten this old man?" Again, he's writing this to Oregon State University. "It looked biblical in nature to me. I am astonished, concerned, and I find it beyond belief how barren the stretch from Astoria, Oregon, to almost Newport is. All the roadside stops that you make, the beaches and places that used to have life in abundance, were barren. There were no birds to speak of, and just a couple of dozen seagulls on the beach. No bugs either. I looked for anything alive and only found a couple of snails in the brush behind the hotel. The only thing alive behind the people and beside the people were the dogs at the hotel. Seriously, it was eerily silent. The only thing that appeared alive was some sort of thing, blue in color, round, a little bigger than a silver dollar, and it had a translucent hood that it had raised. It was like a coin flipped up on edge, and there were two of them on the shore. They were near the high tide level, and the tide was out. The tide line was littered with corpses of crabs 2 or 3 or 4 inches across, just the tops, and a dozen or so just 2 inches long. If a man was hoping to fish or eat from the Pacific Ocean, he will die. Oh, and there were no boats, no fishing boats at all. Signed, Gene from Idaho. And he sent this to Oregon State University. And the last I heard from Gene, not long before this program, was he hadn't gotten any response. Nothing. I don't suppose he will. What amazed me was that it took somebody from Idaho to come to the coast, Dana, to write up the sad and horrific truth. We have killed the Pacific Ocean with nuclear radiation. It's dead. How did you feel when you read this?
It's such a parallel to what I'm doing. It's like it resonates so easily. And it's just, I don't like hearing it from other people.
Yeah.
I don't like the confirmation, but
yeah.
I always wish for that confirmation. When I get it, I don't want it. And I deal with it because there's something unique there going on. You know, I'm back at it again because I get it. I understand. And I know my sacrifice is little, is insignificant for what needs to be done. It's absolutely thrilled to have the opportunity, even though it doesn't work out, you know, very well. And I'm so blessed to have the support and equipment and the skills to do what I'm doing. How could I not, you know,
right.
How could you not do it?
Well, Dana has, are you still by yourself?
I got no choice. I am by myself, yeah.
And that's, he's on a 36-foot sailboat?
It's 32-foot sailboat, 11 feet wide, and I have 2 Zodiacs, a 25-foot with a cabin on it, and a 10-foot with a cabin on it. And
wow.
They both got double motors.
Mm-hmm.
They have underwater drone. It's good for 20 hours underwater, up to 100 feet. 4K camera and a gimbal, so it's a very, very beautiful shot if you can get it. But with all the stormy weather and heavy rains, a lot of sediment is getting washed out and the ocean is being thrashed. On some days I can get unbelievable clear distances. I'm hoping to find a flock of birds feeding and drop the drone down would be the ultimate scenario, but we're using it. I say we because it took so many people to put this operation together. And
let me also, Dana, personally thank everyone who has helped Dana do his work.
Thank you.
No one else is doing it. He's doing it.
That's the only reason it happened. That's the only reason we're able to do what I'm doing. And it's just, you know, this has to be done. We got to have the documentation because the gobbledygook nuclear industry will come up with every excuse in the book. To avoid the conversation. We got to have the conversation, see? And because we can't have the conversation, then we can't come up with solutions.
Right, right.
Like, you've got good solutions in the advertising. You got all this GMO-free food. That's huge. Like, people don't realize the significance of that kind of food. You're talking about, like, 300,000 times more energy than GMO. It's like, you got to eat less
Right.
You got to eat 425 corn on the cob of GMO to get the same amount of calcium, magnesium, iron, carbon, cobalt as you would get from a normal everyday
425 pieces of corn on the cob?
Right. You get the same amount of calcium because by parts per million is how it's measured.
So it's being stripped out of everything, nutrition.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And the radiation on top of that doesn't allow you uptake the nutrients with your red blood cells. Your red blood cells are carrying it through your body.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the radiation gets in your body, what your body does is it attacks white blood cells. They displace your red blood cells,
mm-hmm.
which is also carrying oxygen. And so you get a little lethargic and you don't want to do the extra work to cook supper and you start eating junk.
Right.
And then it compounds on you dramatically and then you're more susceptible to pathogens and viruses.
Absolutely.
And deficiencies and injuries. And like with radiation, cancer is the last one to show up. So there's 1,800 diseases for everybody. Your heart problems, liver problems, lung problems. So liver and lung tumors and bone tumors were the tumors that show up first in the animals. And there's so much radiation that came out of these places, continued to come out. It was constant for quite a few years, a constant heavy stream coming out. The whole ocean was covered at the one time. Within 2 weeks, the whole ocean was covered. And so just because we had this horrible event, this horrible, horrible thing happened to our planet. Now, the trick is not to cover it up. The trick is to deal with it and do a about face and say, okay, well, we've got to come up with solutions. Because it's obviously, this is a genocide and an ecocide against the planet. But at some point, the future generation, somebody is going to have to go try to stop these reactors. And because it's so deadly, just the steam coming out of the ground, 10 sievers, these are lethal doses. And so you need a 4-foot thick suit on.
You couldn't do it. You can't. We don't have the technology to even begin now. The robots are destroyed within minutes. They can't even go in there. The other thing I want to go back to is, and I really thank Gene. Gene will be with us Thursday, so please don't miss that. The second hour with Yoshi. This letter that he wrote, nobody... None of the locals will talk about this. None of them. And I hesitate to say this, but shame on all of them for not insisting and forcing a dialogue with their politicians that allegedly represent them, with their universities and their scientists and all the rest who are supposedly environmentally wise. This is an environmental calamity, a catastrophe, that extends all the way across the ocean. When this thing first happened, I started talking about this within days. My God, it's going to move from the west to the east, right across the ocean, in the jet stream above and the North Pacific current below in the water. And exactly that happened. I'm no psychic. It didn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out. And now look, 7 years later, look what we have. We have Gene's letter. We have locals who damn well know what's going on, but they will not talk about it. They don't want pressure from their neighbors. They don't want pressure. They're in this for tourism, a lot of them, and I understand that. I get it. But look, you have a dead ocean. You're tending to a dead ocean in terms of bringing tourists there. There's nothing left along the shore. Oh, and some of you say, yeah, I saw a starfish last week. Okay, well, you got a few. You got a very few, but each year that few becomes fewer. And in a few years, there will be absolutely none. I just went outside again during the break. I cannot hear one cricket. Nothing. Not close, not far away, nowhere. It's gone.
I get angry on the beaches, eh?
You what?
Look, I actually get angry when I'm on these beaches.
Oh, yeah.
It's really strange. I don't know how to explain it, Jeff.
I understand what you're saying.
I'm just anger I can't get rid of on the beach, and I calm down when I get back on the boat. And then it's just, there's nothing there. There's no samples to take. It's just the same algaes, three or four algaes on each beach, no matter where you go. And originally, you should be able to go and get all these species, and that was the idea originally, but there is nothing there. It's so shocking to someone like me in particular, but these communities are... It seems like everybody knows what Fukushima is, but yet they don't know me. And so I find that a little hard to believe, right, you know? how can you know so much about Fukushima or anything about Fukushima but not know anything about me?
Because I've
made a lot of noise about this. I put out a lot of presentations. I've really pushed the bar to a whole different... It's going to be impossible to jump the bar that I've set up here. And it wasn't because something to do. It was desperation trying to get this planet to go free for itself. And
I go outside, and I'm sure you feel the same, and for those of you listening who get it also, you may be in Ohio, North Carolina, Florida, Mississippi, and you say, oh, we got insects everywhere here. Are there as many as there used to be, really? Look at the feature I have under the Fukushima box on the right-hand side of the homepage. Read the accounts from people around the country. Once in a while, somebody will say the insects are normal. 95% say something's wrong. Something's really wrong. We have a farm light. In the summer, I'd look up. I couldn't even see the light bulb. There were so many insects swarming around the light. He said, now there might be 10 or 20. That's it. It's done. This is like when I go out and listen, Dana, and there's no noise. It reminds me of being on what must be like to be on a dead planet somewhere. Right. There's nothing here.
That's a good way of thinking. Because that's how I feel. So, like, a lot of these beaches look like the moon. And I'm there getting ready to come ashore, and there's nothing there. And it's like, it just feels pointless. But you got to document it anyway. But it feels so pointless and so boring and so mind-numbing, you know? You got to go punch in time and get the job done at low tide no matter what. Because it's desperation more than anything else, I would imagine. And I still don't get what drives me to punish myself this way outside of desperation for this planet to do something more for a change, I suppose. I always do that, too, when I get really upset, you know. I just I work harder. And, like, I took with me on the ocean, I think, 7,000 lectures plus of nuclear. And I have probably 60,000 studies on radiation. And I have, hundreds of thousands of headlines and documentation altogether. It's just impossible. It's 4 terabytes of data. Impossible to get through it all when I'm out here, but I'm trying. And some of these lectures I'm listening to 8, 9, 10 times. And you filter out the lies and you start saying, well, most of it's lies. Harvard University, almost all lies on Fukushima. Yale University told you. Came out originally, like everybody turned to these institutions and Stanford, Oxford, and MIT, and the rest of them. And it just, the nuclear experts you brought out lied to everybody on purpose right away. Never hesitated either. CNN, BBC, they were revolting. It's revolting. I have so many clips of the tsunami, and they're talking about the radiation. Just everybody's playing it down. Everybody's acting incompetent. Everybody's saying the same. It's like a banana. It's like a potato chip. It's like walking in sunshine. It's like getting on an airplane. And so people don't understand the urgency. They got this imprinted into them, and this is why we're so far behind. But at some point, because we're living in this age where people are able to be articulated on a subject if they choose to be, I got a feeling in the very near future it's not going to be very safe to be a nuclear or anything unless you're anti-nuclear. But these pro-nuclears, I think they're going to pay for what they got done. I just don't want to go that way. You know, that's the breakdown of society is what I'm talking about. And that's what happens when you kill off a planet, all the species on the planet. There's no rule book here. We're at the top of the food chain. We're consuming everything.
This is the most important story of our times, and it's never mentioned except here. Dana's work. Yoshi, we did every month, twice a month for years on this story. We documented it. Dana's documented it. If you're up in the Northwest, any of you, go stick your head outside. See if you hear anything in the forest or wherever you are. Do you hear crickets? Do you hear birds in the morning? Do you see birds as many as you used to? Go along the shore and look. How many seagulls do you see? Tens of thousands in huge flocks? Pelicans? So many different seabirds. sea
right,
lions.
We covered those headlines, Jeff. We covered those headlines of them all just dying off, mysterious pathogens, mysterious viruses, mysterious disease.
Why are the Southern California sea lions all starving to death? Because they got nothing to eat. Nothing.
That was shocking, eh?
Yeah.
Did the real big die-off happen of those?
Yeah.
The same, like, the pelicans, there's 20,000 of them disappeared.
And then
there was a breeder colony of around 20,000 was another story, and they only had 20 chicks.
That's right. I covered that, too. I remember it.
And they abandoned them.
That was in the Gulf of Mexico. That was in
Florida or something. I can't remember.
No, it was on the West Coast.
Was it a thing?
Yeah, there's a big rookery down near Mexico on an island somewhere. Anyway.
But Yoshi walked your coastline down there. He went down to the beaches, too. Yoshi Shinatsu. And
who did?
Yoshi.
Oh, he went to Southern California. He went to a number of places.
Yeah, he did so. He went out and walked because we'd done radio shows, right? And we talked about how naked they were and how we found dead animals in this one area and how the authorities were downplaying everything. And now, you know, what really is so disappointing, but it's proof now of that the whole system is destroyed, has destroyed itself. Every university is lying to people, every one of them, without fail. And so, like, how did we ever get to that stage? And they told everybody it was iodine-131 to be gone in 8 days, you know? The oldest song in the book, they even pulled it out in 2011 and used it against everybody, because I still got the documentation from back then collected up. And it's such a betrayal to see all these universities do that. And look what they've done to me. You know, I had major institutions gave me gag orders, and the government went along with it. And the government used the private police force to get me and give me 6 gag orders. And then the Japan Times broke the story and come out and said, we got them, like I was Saddam Hussein or something. And uranium stocks worldwide went down that day to one of the lowest numbers they've seen in decades. And most likely because it was a despicable act, and they come out gloating that they got the only activists out there truly doing the work. But like iodine-132, for people who are in that world, there's 10 times more iodine-132 that shows up at the same time, 30 times more iodine-133, 31 times more iodine-129 in that same sample. They ionized and radiate your thyroid glands 9 times more effective than the 131. And so for all these years, we've never heard that type of story. We've never heard...
No, they hide the number of... They make us think there's 2 or 3 different radionuclides. There are hundreds and hundreds of different ones.
That's a different one to worry about right away. And it's just... Now we're into this pickle where we just killed the Pacific. We're seeing supercell storms in both oceans.
Yeah.
That, like, can your house handle a 263 miles per hour wind shift?
I doubt it. I doubt it. What we've done. This is an extinction level event. Potential. I don't know what the ultimate will be, but when you go outside and you don't hear crickets. And you don't notice that, shame on you. And if you do notice it and you don't say anything, double shame on you. How can you be so ignorant of your environment?
If you're so right in what you're saying, though, that's all it takes is everybody starting to talk about it and just pass it out there and don't take the nonsense from the apologists. Tell the truth. And when people come out and say you're full of crap, prove it. Go shoot a video in the forest and bring it out and stick it on the internet.
Come over at 8 o'clock at night and let's count the crickets, huh? Let's listen to the crickets. Let's listen to the songbirds in the morning. They're all gone. It's like a science fiction novel of a planet that killed itself with nuclear power.
There's no chance to talk about it. For goodness sakes, folks, take Biff's suggestion and run with it. Talk about it. At least do that.
Especially you people on the coast, whether it's BC, Washington, Oregon, it doesn't matter. You've got to talk. I mean, thank God for Gene. He had the courage to do this. And we'll talk to him Thursday night. Dana, thank you, my friend. I hear in your voice. I know what's going on. You keep it up. Be safe. What you're doing is essential, and hopefully the weather will clear for you.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, my friend. Good night.
Good night.
Dana Durnford, and extremely brave man. I don't know what to say. I don't have words for it. Leaves me speechless, what we've done. Think about it. Back tomorrow.